You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tim Spencer sitting in for John Moore on this a Friday, the 28th day of June in the year of our Lord, 2019. For those of you that don't already know it, that song is played in tribute to John Moore's late wife, Dr. Marianne Moore, who passed away last Wednesday, midday. And John should be back Monday, from what I understand. There have been no plans set in stone yet for her services, but I am told that they will be towards the end of the month of July. That's the current plan, apparently. Anyway, today our guest is going to be Mr. Tom Berryhill. We're going to talk about emergency radio communications. He should be calling in any minute. And we're going to have Dr. Lynn Wilbert on for the second hour, always a good show. So we'll see what's going on. All right, I understand Tom Berryhill's on the line. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Tim. How are you doing today?
I am doing fine, sir. And yourself?
Pretty good on this sunny day in the Missouri Ozarks.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the weather yet, but I got a feeling it's going to be hot.
I think you're right, Tim. And I've got to cut the grass, and it's growing like crazy lately.
Oh, mine is, too. We get half the yard done. We got about a five-acre yard total. We get half. By the time we get half of it done, the other half needs to be cut again.
That's the way it works.
Yeah. But we'll get it all done. I might get out there myself this morning after the show and do some. But anyway, so where do we want to go on emergency radio communications today, Tom?
Well, we talked about a
little bit. What do you want to talk about? Yeah.
Well, anything. So many of the new ham operators get into this. They want to use repeaters. We can talk about repeaters. We can. My favorite, though, is the HF portable operation, where you can operate your radio equipment on a portable basis, anywhere you want to go, using battery power, solar panels, anything like that. That's really important for emergency use. And, of course, course,
yeah,
HT radios, portable handheld radios, are real common, and a lot of the hams enjoy using those. They have very limited range, but they can be pretty handy. I use some of those myself, well, but I never try to rely on them as the only piece of radio equipment because their range is so limited.
That's right. I absolutely agree with you. But if you have one of those hooked up to a repeater, you know, let's say you're on your own farm, you know, and you're a half mile away from your base station and you have your own repeater, they can work quite well.
That's very true, Tim. And on the subject, so on the subject of repeaters, the problem is with emergency communications is if the infrastructures are going down, if there's no cell service, if there's no electric power, you're going to have problems using a repeater station unless it is backed up by generator power. And many repeaters are. Many times these are set up on mountaintops or tall buildings, tall towers, and there may be a generator system there to keep them running, but that's only as good as a fuel source. So if they have a propane tank, which is usually the case,
right,
they better keep it filled, and then it doesn't always last that long. I think the best systems out there, and there's quite a few ham systems set up like this in the western states where they'll put the repeaters on top of a mountain, and they have battery systems that are backed up by and kept charged by solar panels, and these will operate 24/7. They don't have to run a whole lot of power. Everybody thinks that you need tremendous amounts of power to talk real far, and that's not the case at all, especially with the repeaters. I've seen them
on not anymore.
They're only 25 watts or so, and they cover an entire countryside. I mean, they'll go out 50, 60 miles because of their height. So it's the height of the antenna that's most important, especially on VHF and UHF. You want your antennas as high as possible. With HF systems, that's really not the case at all. With a portable HF system, in fact, there's some systems that actually they'll lay the antenna on the ground or just a few inches off the ground, and then they rely on the signal going straight up and bouncing back down off the ionosphere. And you can easily cover, 100 or 200 mile radius with systems like that, and only running a few watts of power. So it's done all the time. And there's a whole subculture of ham operators that enjoy doing these backpack radios and operating systems exactly as I just described.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Now, to me, solar power, I know it bothers some people, but to me, solar power is just as, you know, as simple as falling out of bed. I enjoy playing with it. I understand it. And to me, setting up a solar system to power a repeater, I mean, that'd be about the easiest thing in the world to me, and it's relatively cheap. The most expensive part is a couple of deep cycle batteries. You know, that's the expensive part. The panels themselves aren't bad at all.
Yes, that's correct. The solar systems have become very, very inexpensive relative to the old days. I remember when it could be, spend a couple of thousand setting up just even a small system, and now, heck, you'd go to Harbor Freight and buy solar panels, and then the batteries, of course, is going to be one of the most expensive parts. But Tim, there's always a way to throw things together, get surplus equipment, and do it on a real small budget and get the job done, and it'll work very efficiently, and that's what you're after.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'm working on a little solar project right now. It's all money dependent, but I've got an uninterruptible power supply that John Moore gave me that didn't work, and I've made it work. Oh, excuse me. And I'm going to get a couple of those solar panels from where you said, Harbor Freight. They're $149. I'm going to set it on the southwest end of my house on the second story, both of them, run a wire to the battery, basically charge them at 12 volts, and I will have a lot of power, run my computer system and phone chargers and everything else, if we had like an ice storm or something like that where we had no power for quite a while. So that's my little project right now. It's getting
that's
going.
True. And that's how I operate my ham equipment here is I do have several small solar panels. They're not real big, but they just keep the batteries topped off. I'll also charge them up sometimes with AC, you know, using a power supply and charge them up. But they're 55 amp hour deep cycle batteries. They were made for cell phone sites where the towers are, and they go in the tower buildings to keep the cell phone equipment running. And those are always backed up, usually with propane generators or emergency use.
Right.
When the AC power's out. But in my case, if I'm going to run for a long period of time, I will hook up AC power to it and run the equipment on that, or actually charge the batteries with that power supply. And otherwise, though, if I'm just listening or periodic transmitting, I will actually let the solar system run the whole thing all the time. And it works very, very well.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, it's nice. Even when you have no power, it's nice to have a little bit of power to run your communications equipment. I mean, that to me, that is important, very important. You need to know what's coming at you, folks. You need to know what's going on around you. Even if it's not immediately affecting you, you don't see mushroom clouds on the horizon and all that, which is a very good thing. You need to know what's going on. And, you know, and that's where Tom and I are coming from. So, hey,
we can talk
Tom,
more
we've
about
got Jerry in Texas on line 5.
Okay. Go ahead, Jerry.
Good morning,
Jerry.
Tom. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Tim. I just
morning, sir.
Got in a little late on the conversation. Down here, there's a lot of the guys, I say a lot, there's some of the guys are taking the old UPSs and what have you, and they're going to the hardware stores and feed stores and buying the little 6 and 12-volt rechargeable batteries for deer feeders and setting them up.
Yeah. That's where I got my first solar panel was off a deer feeder that had fallen off a truck. And I've got that on our little camper that keeps the battery charged.
Yeah. Well, they're using the batteries. They've got those
right.
batteries now. From what I understand, they're pretty tough. They cycle for a long time before you have to replace them. And they're inexpensive. I use the word inexpensive. I don't like cheap. I like good, inexpensive stuff, you know. Play on words, but
right.
I just thought I'd throw that in on the mix this morning. And
I hadn't thought of that, Jerry, but you're right. Those batteries are good batteries. They last forever. Well, you know, figuratively speaking, forever. But I've been told they last 8 or 10 years.
I don't know the longevity of them, but they're designed to be out in the elements. To a large degree, and extreme temperatures, hot and cold, and everything in between. And they're sealed batteries, is my understanding. No maintenance that's required. So to get started, I haven't set one up. I want to do that, just see how it is. But there's one gentleman that's... But I talk to constantly on the repeater. He's got a lot of computers and radios. And the other day they had power failure for several hours, and he had been talking about setting that stuff up. He said that he run, I think, 4 hours or something on a battery for his radios and computers. And when it all said and done, it said it still had something like 21 hours left before the controller would... shut everything down. So, I don't know how many batteries he had. Ron, he's kind of, if a little bit is good, a whole lot is better on stuff like that, which in this case it was. So, anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in the mix. And Appreciate you picking up for John this time of his life.
My honor.
And, you know, anyway, my condolences is out to him, so, and the family. So, with that, I'm going to wish everybody a good weekend, and I'll get back to listening. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Hey, you going to give me a call tomorrow, Jerry, on my show?
Oh, you know me. Nothing else, I'll call and open my mouth and change feet.
All right, that works, buddy. You have a good day, Jerry.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. You know, Tom, he's right about those deer feeder batteries. I forgot all about that, and I've got a solar cell off one. you know, that is an inexpensive way to procure batteries, really.
Well, yeah, it would be, Tim. And, you know, Jerry mentioned the UPS systems. Let me tell you what I did once. They had an ad in the local newspaper, and they were having collection day up at City Hall. You could bring in old televisions, anything that had battery, anything like that, old computers and monitors and things like that, washing machines, refrigerators. You could just dispose of appliances and what have you. And I went up there.
Right.
And there were several UPS systems sitting around. And this stands for uninterruptible power supply. And many people will recognize these as the unit that you you plug it in the wall, and then you plug your apparatus into that, such as a computer or whatever else you want to run, and it will operate that equipment for about 20 minutes. And the idea here is to give you enough time to, if the main power goes out, your computer keeps running, gives you enough time to back up your files and shut things down in an orderly manner, and then turn the computer off and wait for the power to come back on. Well, what you can do with these things, and the reason they show up all the time being disposed of, is because the only thing that's wrong with them is the batteries. The batteries go bad.
Right.
And then people throw the whole thing away. They just want to get rid of it and get a new one. Well, I've picked these things up for practically nothing. And at that thing where you're turning things in, they didn't care so much about the equipment, just the batteries. And I said, I could really use these. They actually came out of the city hall there in the small town that I'm near. And they just wanted to make sure the batteries were recycled. I said, well, I'll open them up right now, take the batteries out. Leave the batteries here. I just want the main unit. They said, sure, that's fine with them. So I took two of those things, and they were one of them was a 2.5 kilowatt UPS system.
Oh wow!
So that would run quite a bit. And then all I did was go inside and modify it. I punched a large hole in there and put a plastic bushing in that hole so that the metal wouldn't cut the wires or nick anything, and then I brought out larger cables, extended those battery cables to the outside, and put large batteries. In fact, the batteries I use to run my ham radio equipment, those 55-amp-hour batteries, I bought, I was at a place that was wholesaling some of those out, and I bought all of them. So 540 pounds of batteries. All of them, and I've gotten them to different friends. Yeah, different people needed them, so I helped others that were looking for batteries like that, and then I kept some for my own use. And that's what I do in that UPS system. I have four of those batteries hooked up to that thing, and it powers it. And you can run for hours and hours with that system, depending on how big of a load you put on it, of course. If you're going to try to run an electric stove, well, forget it. But it will run television sets, radios, some lamps, things like that. And what really works good with a system like this, Tim, is if you set up the UPS, set up the batteries, and then have a generator that you can run occasionally for 2 or 3 hours a day to charge those batteries up again, and then you always run off the batteries. You don't run off the generator. If you're only running a single lamp and maybe a radio or a television during a power outage, you don't want to run that generator all the time. It's too costly.
Hey, Tom, we got a break, buddy. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 3 minutes. 1-800-313-9443.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Well, I wish I was in the land of cotton wool, town there I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Well, I wish I was in
the land. All right, folks, we are back. Today is the 28th day of June, a Friday, and we are visiting with Mr. Tom Berryhill, where our subject basically is emergency radio communications, but we can go off in any direction. You know, Tom, one of the things that Rick and Lori and I have been talking about on our show is running a refrigerator in the same way that you're talking about running radios. Solar panel, charging batteries, old junk, uninterruptible power supply for the conversion to 120, and heavily insulating the refrigerator with that blue board they put up on the outside walls of houses before they put on the siding. And we've got part of the stuff to do it, and we are going to be putting in a summer kitchen out back, and I'm going to try it. Already got money allocated in our budget for a deep cycle battery. What do you think about that idea?
I think that's really a good idea. Just keep in mind that when sizing the equipment, especially the inverter, the power inverter, or the UPS system that you're going to use, batteries and everything, you want to make sure that it's capable of starting the motor. You see, the compressor in a refrigerator is a small motor. And they're not a very high horsepower,
right.
But it always takes about 5 to 7 times the the running power to get the motor started. So if it's let's just say it's a third horsepower, and it could be third, maybe a half horsepower. I don't remember what the typical refrigerator is, you know, home size unit, average size unit,
right.
But I'd say at least a third to a half horsepower. You're going to need five times that just to get it started. So you got to think in terms of wattage. Most of these UPSs are rated in kilovolt amperes or KVA, and if you start getting into power factor and all this when you want to talk in terms of kilowatts. So, and it's maybe getting too complex to even talk in those terms, Tim, but just keep in mind, whatever the kilowatt or KVA rating is on the motors and the inverters and all, just make sure that inverter can handle 5 to 7 times. I'd go even maybe 10 times for a very short period of time just to get it started, maybe a half second or so. Once that motor's starting, then it goes with the running current, and it's not that big of a deal. And that's any inductive load, anything that in most cases it's going to be mainly just motors. If you have an electric fan or something like that that you wanted to run to stay cool, because you're going to have trouble powering a large air conditioner for your home. Now, you might be able to get a UPS. You might be able to run a small window air conditioner, maybe just air condition one room, but you're going to have to maybe have a complete separate system for that. That's where your power hogs
are. I think
you
would be
air conditioning, electric heat.
All right, on the refrigerator deal, would a capacitor help?
Well, that's how...
I'm curious. I don't know.
Yes. Well, we're going to get real technical here, Tim, and I don't know if the listeners want to go that direction, but you can modify the power factor.
Well, you're right. I was getting into my own thinking instead of paying attention to what the listeners wanted to hear. You're right,
okay,
Tom.
But the that's how a motor starts. They shift. They do a phase shift. They shift the. Wish I had a. If I could draw a picture, Tim, and it's hard to explain. But if I had a whiteboard or a chalkboard, I could draw a picture and explain to people why that motor takes so much to get started. But one of the things they do is they switch a capacitor in. If you've ever started an induction motor, you'll hear a click when it first ramps up, and when you turn the motor off, you'll hear another click. And what that is there's a centrifugal switch in there. It switches a capacitor in, and the capacitor's in the circuit, and when the motor comes up to speed, the centrifugal forces cut out that switch and switch the capacitor out. They only need the capacitor to get the motor started. It's a phase-shifting arrangement to give it more current, so that the current leads the voltage and gets the motor started. That's basically what they're doing. And then once that motor's started, it's no big deal. Now, a three-phase motor is totally different. They don't have any phase shift circuits because they have three phases, and they just start on their own. They're self-starting. So that's
of course, everybody can always do my trick. Grab on the pulley and spin it. Good way to lose a finger, though.
You know, you're laughing about that, but I have a drill press that I've had for years, and it's a single phase motor with the capacitor start, and the capacitor's bad. It went out a long time ago, so when I flip the switch on that thing, it just sits there and hums, a loud hum, and then I just just turn the spindle a little bit and get it started. The thing is, though, once a motor like that is the capacitor's out, you can spin it and make it run either direction. Depends on which way you want to spin the shaft of the motor. So I just spin the spindle on a drill press. I just give it a little quick turn, and it takes off on its own. It's fine.
Wow, we got a break again already. That went quick. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 3 minutes. 1-800-313-9443.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today. Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Today is the 28th day of June in the year of our Lord, 2019, a Friday. We're visiting with Mr. Tom Berryhill. We're talking about emergency radio communications and a lot of the things that go with it. Okay, Tom, where do we want to go next, buddy?
Well, we talk more about the power equipment, our, of course, radios, our antennas.
Okay.
You'll have to bring up a topic, Tim. I I'm not an expert on any of them, but I have a lot of practical and hands-on knowledge. I'll do my best to answer questions or discuss it.
Well, I'll tell you something I think might help our listeners in deciding on what kind of antennas to use for what. In other words, I know for a fact we can string a wire for some frequencies. You can use, tuned antennas for other frequencies. On my system, I had a J-pole, which worked great, copper tubing J-pole. Do we want to go in some of those directions by chance?
Well, we could. I've never used a J-pole antenna. I've seen plenty of them out there. I've just always, I'd either use a factory-made a gain antenna, or just a quarter-wave ground plane or quarter-wave whip antennas on the car for VHF and UHF. That's all I've ever used. Never used a gain antenna on the car. And the way the way a gain antenna works, a lot of a lot of the hams, the new hams especially, aren't really up on all this. But what happens with a gain antenna is the antenna is physically longer, and then you have to, there's a coil in there that will match the impedance, so it matches the 50-ohm impedance output of the radio. And what it what a gain antenna does, it's almost like taking, if you took a balloon and compressed it, it squeezes out on the edges, and that's exactly what that gain antenna does. It doesn't amplify your power. It's a passive device. It doesn't increase your power, but what it does is it squishes down to, instead of a ball like on a quarter wave antenna where the, it just radiates out in a, almost a circular pattern out to the, you know, horizontal from the antenna, what this does is it squishes that down almost like it turns it into a donut and pushes it farther out on the horizon, and it just allows the radiation pattern to change itself to where it's focused on the horizon as far out as possible. Rather than wasting energy going straight up and all around, it just pushes it down and forces it out towards the horizon, and that gives you your gain. And the higher the gain, the more complex that pattern becomes, but basically that's how it works. And then everybody can remember when you, and then they'll talk about effective radiated power, and that confuses a lot of people because they think that that antenna has made the power increase, but it does not. It's just, it, no. it almost acts like the power has increased over a quarter wave antenna, just a little wire whip antenna. It actually makes it sound like the power has increased, but it really hasn't. And for every 3 decibels of gain on an antenna, it will give you the same effect as doubling the power. And then every 10 decibels of gain will give you the same effect, but 10 times the power. It's a logarithmic curve on decibels. So that's how that works. And the same thing, and you have to take this into account also, Tim, when you're setting up antenna systems. If you have long transmission lines, you really need to look at the specifications for those cables and see what the losses are at the frequency you're operating on. If you have a, always keep, what I do just to get rough calculations, I remember 3 decibels and 10 decibels. 3 decibels is double the power or half the power, cuts the power in half if you go the other way. 10 decibels will give you the same effect as multiplying the power by 10. So, for instance, if you have a 10 decibel gain antenna and you're putting 10 watts of power into it, that gives you an effective radiated power of 100 watts. That's like having a 100-watt transmitter on a little wire antenna. So it's wise to get gain antennas if you can, if you have the room to put them in, because they are longer and taller.
Right.
They work really good for a base station setup. I don't care for them too much on a mobile unit. They're too big and they get in the way, but I just use the wire whips on the mobile unit. But anyway, that's what you'd want to do, and then you have to take into account your feed line losses. So if you have a real long cable going out up the tower or what have you, you're going to lose a lot of power through there. If you have a 3 decibel loss, half your power is gone before it gets to the antenna. So keep that in mind.
Right. Hey, Tom, let me interrupt you for just a second. We got a caller, and I want to talk about coax when we get done with the caller. We got Glenn in Pennsylvania on line 11. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Hi.
What's on your mind today, buddy?
Well, first of all, and since I'm hearing you two here, I'm guessing that John's wife has passed away. I'm guessing that's the case.
Yes, last Wednesday. Last Wednesday about noon.
So I'm very sorry to hear that. I was surprised. I didn't know that that was the case until he mentioned it. That she was dying, and that he mentioned it a week or so ago. I was very sorry to hear that. So that he's, and now he's had 2 losses. Now Jimmy Jensling wasn't that long ago, and now his wife. So John's
Jimmy Jensling was a very good friend of mine, as was Mary Ann.
Right. So just basically commit everybody to prayer and ask God to sustain people and heal hearts and help them grieve well and be healed. So that's what's one of my crossed my mind there. What I called about was an electrical question, Tom, for you, and this will be kind of a slow pitch for you. But you were talking about capacitors, and I think that they must have something to do with this. I had purchased online a little unit about the size of a cell phone that you can charge up with a USB charger, and it comes with a red and black cable with battery clamps for using it to start a car, jump start a car. Now, you know, and the thing works. A friend of mine had one, and that's why I ended up getting one. You have these little things you can carry around in your car the size of a cell phone, and it comes with, you know, the cables are just relatively short, and they're not that heavy gauge, but you clamp them on the terminals of the battery of a car that won't start, and it starts the car. So I have great difficulty figuring out how in the world something the size of a cell phone can produce enough amperage to jump start a car. And I'm guessing you have an idea.
I can only guess at this, Glenn. I really don't know. I've heard of these things. I've never tried one myself. I've seen the units where there's a smaller battery in there than what your car battery would be, but you can keep that charged up, and it will start the car maybe once or twice, but this is very small. The only thing I can guess, and I'm guessing at this, that there might be what's called a charge pump in there where it actually charges up batteries to a higher voltage than your 12 volts, and it can go on that right on that battery and perhaps give it a boost that way by pushing in a higher voltage.
And, they were doing that like years ago. You'd see like some of the guys that would use like 24 volt jump starters. But that, I think that became too much voltage in the era of all these computers in the cars and that sort of thing.
That's true.
Go ahead.
That's true. But as long as the battery's in the circuit, well, you know, it might be weak or dead, that will regulate.
Yep.
That will regulate things somewhat. Now, I would never put a higher voltage into one of these modern cars if there was no battery. If the battery was totally disconnected, I would never substitute a higher voltage for that because you would damage a lot of that equipment or those
pieces.
Absolutely. Right.
I don't think voltage is so much. What I'm wondering about is amperage. I mean, it takes a certain amount of current, you know, there's supposed to be a certain amount of current there.
I agree with that. I agree 100%. The only way to know is to get the specs on that thing and see what they're doing. That's why I suspect that they may be actually a circuit called a charge pump will take a low voltage and pump it. You fill up capacitors. Anyway, it's kind of complex.
Right.
And then you could charge higher voltage batteries with this thing. Off of a USB cable, you could actually charge up something and make it as high as 50 volts. And maybe they're just putting higher voltage spikes in that battery to just give it, to rejuvenate it a little bit, enough to get the car started. That's my only guess for something that small. And they're not really relying on amperage. They're relying on the amperage that's already in the battery that's maybe weak but not totally dead. And you give it a few higher voltage spikes. You can get the thing going. I mean, I've done this to car. I shouldn't.
Oh, okay. I get it. I get it.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're giving it a high.
Yeah.
And they may be very sharp pulses of higher voltage, and not real high voltage, maybe 18 or 20 volts. Who knows? But the only way to really see that is put an oscilloscope on there and watch what it's doing.
Well, I think they have the computers in the cars better protected now, but I remember, you know, my brother back in the 90s had a 90 Ford Probe, which was really a Mazda, and he did a jump start on it, and properly, in the proper sequence, you know, and attaching the cables and everything, but it blew out some, you know, computer module for the entertainment unit or something. And it was very expensive. But nowadays, you know, you don't hear about the computers being quite that touchy. I think the circuitry's a little better protected, but probably because it's so pricey, you know?
Right.
And there's so, many of them.
Maybe that could be what's happening, though, Glenn. They're just giving it high voltage pulses or higher voltage pulses than what the battery operates at, just to get, and then relying on the battery to regulate that so those pulses don't damage anything in the car, but actually force the battery to take somewhat of a quick charge, and then you can get the car started. I really think maybe that's what they're doing. The only way to know is to
have
an oscilloscope on and watch it.
I have another unit, you know, that's heavier. It has like a 12-volt motorcycle-type battery, and it runs the compressor, and it jump-starts things. But that's just a 12-volt, you know, a 12-volt unit that's providing enough amperage to start. And again, you know, in most cases, the battery isn't totally shot. It's just below par. Now, you know, if you've got a badly, deeply discharged battery, it's a little different story. You need more amperage. But all right, Tom. Well, thank you. I think that pump thing makes sense. I was picturing something capacitative, like electronic flash for a camera. You know, has a big old capacitor in there to light the tube. You know,
you can take a low voltage, and apply it to a coil, and then have a capacitor on the other side to smooth out the pulses, and it just pulse that coil, and every time that magnetic field collapses, it will generate an inductive kick at many, many volts higher. I mean, I can take a 5-volt USB type of circuit and increase that to 50 volts easily using a circuit like that, or even higher, maybe 60, 70 volts. So with a very small inductor and some capacitors to smooth it out. Now that's very similar to a charge pump circuit that's used to generate these higher voltages in computer circuits. But that's most likely what they're doing if you have something that's the size of a cell phone, because it'd be very difficult to get a car started off of something that small.
Yeah, mighty nice when you need to help somebody with a jump start or something. You open your glove compartment, pull out this thing, and it works, you know. People marvel, you know, at that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. I got to get going. Thanks for your help. Take care, Tim, Tom. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it. Tom, we only got a couple of minutes before the break. That is fascinating what Glenn was talking about. I don't think it would start an actual dead battery, though, personal opinion.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so either. And then there's also the subject of supercapacitors, where you can charge these things up. The capacitor acts like a battery, and a lot of standby memory circuits are powered that way on computer systems, where they have a supercapacitor that acts as a battery. I'm not that familiar with them.
Well, they were talking about supercapacitors with the Navy's rail gun, too. Apparently, I heard that term when they were talking about that new rail gun that shoots those darts.
Right.
Apparently, that's what they use also. And they're cooled.
Right. They have to keep them, I guess they refrigerate them or something. And that takes a lot of power right there. So you're chasing your tail with some of this stuff.
Now, all I know is apparently they really work. Hey, real quick, Tom, coax, okay? We were talking about decibel loss and gain and all that. The coax size makes a tremendous difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does.
When you're talking about long runs, yeah.
Right, long run, you want a larger diameter. In fact, on tower systems, on VHF and UHF, I've always used what's called heliax, and it's got a spiral shape to it, and for a smaller system where there's maybe 50 or 60 foot tower, you can use half inch cable. Then there's 7/8 and there's 7/8, so some of them are quite large. And on broadcast,
well, I had the half inch on my tower with about a 16 gauge solid copper wire running through it on the center,
right?
And of course, it was half inch or 3/4, somewhere in there. You know, total diameter.
Yeah, the bigger stuff was 7/8. They had some 7/8, I believe, and I think those are. It's I'm going back a ways. I haven't touched any of that stuff in a while, but the half inch was very, very common, and it had a foam core, and it was quite low loss. So the losses on that were very low, and you would never have any trouble using that. That's why your system works so good.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit pricey, but to me it was worth it. You know, and it, like you said, it had the white foam core. It was very difficult to work with, you know, getting bent around, getting it where I wanted it. You know, it was fairly difficult. I'm coming to think of it, I think it was a straight
pitch. Yeah, Tim, if you bend it too sharp of a radius, you'll kink the stuff, and then it's shot. You got to cut that piece out.
Yeah, well, I was careful about that. I didn't do that. All right, Tom, we'll be back in about 3 minutes. I'll let you wrap up your thoughts. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Today is the 28th day of June, year of our Lord, 2019. It's a Friday, and we're wrapping up this hour with Mr. Tom Berryhill. Tom, any closing thoughts?
No, not really. Nothing other than maybe get a shortwave radio. If you've heard all this and there's any interest at all, if you're worried about any kind of a crisis or turmoil in the future, have that shortwave radio. You will hear what's going on worldwide, and listen to the ham operators. Make sure it has single sideband capabilities. It'll be marked SSB, or it might even say single sideband on the specifications. Make sure it can receive those types of transmissions. And you will be kept up to date with what's going on. You might want to get a scanner as well to listen to any types of emergency transmissions in your area, the police, fire, utility companies. They'll have their radios out there. Some of it's encrypted. You can't listen in. A lot of the police departments are going to this exclusively now. They encrypt all the time, so
yeah,
Nobody can listen to them. There's probably ways around that, but it's difficult.
Well, really, yeah, I've read that there are, Tom.
Well, there are, and actually, I had the older style encryption. There was a thing called Motorola SecureNet. And I had a service monitor, which is like a radio. It's a miniature transmitter, receiver, and oscilloscope, and all the test equipment in one box. And it was used to calibrate these radio systems. And you could have a board in there that allowed you to tap into the Motorola systems that had that encryption. And I could listen to any of them. But I worked on that type of stuff, so it was okay to have that. I don't think the general
right.
public was allowed to have it. I don't know all the details. I sold that years ago, but these newer digital systems are very hard to intercept. They can be done, but they're very hard to do. But anyway, back to the scanners. If you get a scanner, make sure it has P25 digital modes on it so that you can listen to the police departments. So many of them are going to that. It's almost crazy to just have an analog scanner anymore. You want to have the digital capabilities on that scanner. Make sure it does receive P25 digital. You'll be able to listen to the police departments then. So that's about it, Tim. Shortwave radio and a scanner with digital capabilities. You'll be able to keep up to date on what's going on with any type of emergency.
And the good part is, more likely than not, you'll actually hear the truth vice what you hear on mainstream media. That's the part I like about it. You get the information firsthand. You know,
that's right.
You don't get the spin.
You don't
right.
have to wait
that, that's what
to
I
get
really
the,
like
the information.
About it. Right, and those hours could make a difference depending on what the situation is. They can make a real difference. The thing I can see it make the most difference on is either a military action or civil unrest. You know, the weather, pretty much, you know, you can get that, but the, you know, rescue, relief efforts, stuff like that, believe me, they don't put out great information on that on mainstream
That's
media.
That's right.
Well, Tom, thank you. Greatly
thank
appreciate
you,
it. Had a fun time today and yesterday. So you have a good one, buddy. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes. Dr. Lynn Wilbert will be our guest, and we'll see what goes from there.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.